on November 2nd, Saturday, at the Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove. That's coming up this fall. It'll be the Saturday closest to the election this year. Our friend Thomas Jefferson, or is it Teddy Roosevelt, is going to join us on stage. We do annual conversations with one of those presidents. Isn't that a crazy thing? This year it's actually going to be T.R., and the guy that portrays those presidents is my friend Clay Jenkinson, who normally joins us in character. But I wanted to talk to Clay for a minute first. Hey, Clay, welcome back to WGN. How are you?
It's great to talk with you, John. I must tell you, I have started phase two of my great John Steinbeck Travels with Charlie tour today on the 5th of July, and I'm heading across the Great Plains and the Intermountain West to Seattle. So I'm going to pull over in about 30 seconds here, but I'm underway.
I wanted to start talking to you about that. For those of you who don't know Clay, like I do, although many of you do, he's not only a guy that does a one-man show with me on stage as one of these presidents or as Meriwether Lewis. He does William Shakespeare as well, such as the breadth of his knowledge and his ability to speak. But he's been traveling the country in a Winnebago, I think it is, and following the steps of Steinbeck. Am I right about that, Clay?
How dare you say Winnebago? It's an airstream. It's a 23-foot flying cloud airstream, and it's absolutely marvelous, my friend. And yes, I am traveling the country. I went 6,400 miles in phase one. I was in Chicago, in fact, but you were gone. You were on one of your many junkets to Europe, and so I missed you there. But I stayed at the Ambassador East Hotel, where Steinbeck stayed with his wife. That's a beautiful. Have you ever been in it?
I'm trying to remember now. I may have, but I haven't stayed there any time lately.
It's a really marvelous hotel, and he got there at like dawn. He'd driven through the night. He was so eager to see his wife, Elaine, who flew out from New York. And he went in and he tried to check in. We've all been there. And they said, I'm sorry. He was traveling incognito. And he said, I'd like to check in. They said, sorry, sir. 3 p.m. is our check-in time. And so he said, he was like ratty and dirty and he hadn't showered and, you know, he was wearing grungy clothes. He said, all right, I'll just like loll around in the lobby here until 3 p.m. Well, this was a place where Marilyn Monroe stayed and Jack Kennedy stayed and Frank Sinatra stayed and Bob Hope stayed. So in about 20 minutes, they said, sir, I think we have found an arrangement for you.
I'm going to remember that. I'm just going to lay it out on the lobby, you know, and open up a box of peanut butter sandwiches or something next time I can't get into a hotel. That's a good hack.
It gets better, John, because he forgot to bring luggage because he was traveling in his truck camper. So before he got to Chicago, he stopped and he put his luggage in a cardboard box and tied it with fishing wire, and he carried that into the lobby of one of the best hotels of Chicago.
Well, so pardon me, but I didn't know about Steinbeck's travels, which you are retracing. What was that all about?
It was 1960, another election year, and he was 58 years old, and he felt that his creative mojo had diminished and maybe collapsed. His health wasn't great. He had had a stroke, not a severe one, but a stroke the year before. And he felt that he was out of touch with America, that he had become kind of a New Yorker instead of an American. And so he wanted to go out and listen to the voice of the people and see what he called this monster country and to try to regain some of his creative juices. And so that's why he did it. And he had a special truck camper designed. This was before RVs really were a thing. And he, just before he left, his wife Elaine said, yeah, maybe you should take the dog. And then he took the poodle Charlie, and Charlie becomes the hero of the book. If you should read it, it's your kind of book. I know of dogs, although dachshunds, and yes. Charlie is far and away the most extraordinary character in all of Steinbeck in terms of animals. And he steals the stage. He steals every scene that he's in. It's a wonderful, lyrical, short, beautiful, confessional book by a major American author at the beginning of the twilight of his career.
1962, Travels with Charlie. Steinbeck, of course, is known maybe better for East of Eden or The Grapes of Wrath, The Pearl, just books that we read in high school or college.
Man, you know, there's a lot. Yeah, exactly.
Cannery Row. And so then did he find his muse? Was it fruitful for him?
Well, that's a good question. I just wrote about this, and people can go read my preliminary analysis after phase one, the first 6,000 miles. And what I conclude, John, is that he did not, that his heart really wasn't in it, that he had become so dependent on his third wife, his most successful marriage, that he hated to be away from her, and he was lonely, and even, he said, desolate much of the time. And in many respects, he just rushed from one Elaine encounter to the next. She met him in Chicago, and she met him again in Seattle. She stayed with him until Monterey, and then she met him in Texas for Thanksgiving. So, you know, he went through the motions, but he didn't really get what he was looking for, because I don't think that his heart was in it. But the good news is that he went away and then wrote a spectacular, splendid book about it. And so the book sort of is more interesting than the journey.
So now you're retracing those steps, going to some of the same places. You call it a listening tour. Before I ask you about your revelations, was that his idea, though? Was he going to listen to America and come up with ideas as you have been?
Yes, he wanted to get a sense of the mood of the country in 1960. He wanted to hear regional accents. He wanted to eat regional food. He wanted to see, you know, whether, as he worried, the United States was becoming a culturally homogenous place, which indeed it has. And so he wanted to go get the pulse of it. But he had never really explored the heartland. He lived in California, and that's his muse. That's where his great work comes from. It's all set in those magnificent agricultural valleys in central California. And then after he got famous, he moved to New York. And he said, New York is not America, you know, any more than Chicago is America, any more than Seattle is America. They're part of America, but the real America is, you know, Wadena, Minnesota, or Springfield, Missouri, or Springfield, Illinois, for that matter. And so, yes, he did. And so I'm following that because I find him fascinating, and I'm writing a book about him. But I'm also doing this, John, because I don't know if you've noticed, but the country is sort of in a bad mood, and it's not clear what, you know, our confidence seems to be shaken. We're at each other's throats. There's a lot of paralysis and polarization and demonization. And my sense, John, is, and I think you and I share this view, I know we do because we're dear friends, that the country is better than major media is presenting, that the country is actually healthier, in a better mood, more productive, more creative, more, you know, committed to common sense than we get from MSNBC and Fox, that those are distorting lenses.
Still there, Clay? Because you're on a roll, and I agree with everything you said.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, I didn't. I could go on endlessly. I thought you wanted to get a word in from.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what I was thinking, though, as you paused, and thank you for that. But I must confess to you, and maybe I shouldn't on the 5th of July, that yesterday when it was all Americana, and you and Steinbeck would have appreciated what Brenda and I did with our friends. We cooked out, and then we got on a riverboat and went up and down the Illinois River, and then we got off and listened to music and watched fireworks into the night and met people that we didn't know at the fireworks show. And so it was all of those things that maybe we should reflect on during the 4th of July. And when people would sometimes play patriotic songs or wave the flag, I didn't have a real warm feeling. I'm mad at America right now. I'm mad at the Supreme Court. I'm not confident about the way the election is going to play out for a whole host of reasons without even saying who I'm going to vote for. So this idea of saluting the flag in all of America is a little difficult for some of us. You said that some of us are angry right now, and I think that's true about the national mood.
I agree with you, John. You know, I've been on that boat with you and Brenda on the Illinois River, and I've stayed with you at your estate, which is, I think, only 742 miles from downtown Chicago, and I've loved it. And I think you and Brenda are my idea of what Americans should be, because you care about this country, you're true patriots, you're optimists at heart, but you're not fools. You're seeing what's going on here, that something has gone wrong in American life, that there's an uneasiness, and on the right there's rage, and on the left there is righteousness. And we're not talking with each other really anymore. And we think that the other one, whatever the other is, with a capital O, is not true America. But we are the true Americans. And the left does this to the right and regards the heartland as redneck country. And the right does this to the left and regards the coastal cities as, you know, proto-communist or whatever. This is not good. We've stopped trying to find the common ground. And, you know, John, there is so much common ground. I don't want to sound like a naive patriot, but we have an incredible amount of freedom and liberty. How about mobility? This country is vast, and you can go from state to state, and Canada is very friendly to us, Mexico quite friendly. So we have advantages that no people on earth has ever had, and we're the wealthiest people who ever walked the face of the earth. You know, you go into a Walmart and you're just overwhelmed by the amount of stuff that we have access to at relatively good prices. I was in communist countries when I studied at Oxford, and you'd find like 4 bars of soap and 6 bottles of water. This is a nation of abundance, and this is a nation of almost unprecedented freedom. The problem is that we've just gotten ourselves into this bad mood. And I have to say, the debate last week did not cheer any American up.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that, although I wonder if people who are inclined to vote for Donald Trump were more cheerful about it. They certainly must have felt that they, quote-unquote, won. But I don't think anybody is winning when those are the two candidates, or when that was the performance. One was baffled and the other was lying. So there we are, and therein lies our sour mood. I'm going to pause here, Clay. Let's come back and tell me what you are hearing, though. So as you go through Wadena, Minnesota, and the Springfields and so forth on your listening tour, he podcasts about it and writes about it. This is Clay Jenkinson. You may recognize his voice from all of the Ken Burns documentaries or from various visits with us at WGN. So, Clay, what are you hearing? That's next. This is WGN. 11:51. We got a few minutes left with Clay Jenkinson. He performs as Thomas Jefferson or Teddy Roosevelt or Meriwether Lewis on stage once or more a year with us here at WGN Radio. He's been traveling the country in his vaunted Airstream trailer and retracing John Steinbeck's travels in Travels with Charlie. You may have read that. Now you can follow Clay as you read his blogs and listen to and watch his podcast postings. By the way, Clay, we just need to remind people that you and I are going to be on stage once again in Downers Grove at the Tivoli Theater on the 2nd of November. That'll be the Saturday before we vote, I guess. And you'll be portraying Teddy Roosevelt for us. Tickets go on sale right around Labor Day. And Clay, are you aware of the fact that this will be the 25th year you and I have been doing this?
Amazing. I remember when we met at the Minnesota State Fair.
Yeah.
You were 9 and I was 14. And we had a great time, and on the basis of that, you've invited me to do a number of programs with you, and I say and I mean, you're the one talk show host in America that I want to be on stage with, because you have such a reputation for fairness, humor, good sense, and enlightenment without being either left or right, and that really matters to me, and our friendship has become one of the most important friendships in my life, John, and I can't wait for November 2nd. You know, Roosevelt's going to be there. When we break character at the end, I might want to say a few words about how Thomas Jefferson would look at things these days.
Well,
but Roosevelt will be in a pugnacious mood, I can promise you that. Imagine Roosevelt debating Donald Trump, or Roosevelt debating Joe Biden.
Well, you know, they would definitely need to mute the mic because Roosevelt was loquacious. It was funny in the last debate where they would be given 2 minutes. Neither of them could fill the 2 minutes. It's not like they ran over. A lot of times they ran considerably short. The thing was so managed it almost killed the debate. But that wasn't the fatal flaw of the whole thing. I wanted to mention this. And then also tell us what you're hearing as you travel the country, Clay. But sure. This year, after we do about 90 minutes of questions and answers from the audience and me to you as Roosevelt, the hilarious but thoughtful, bombastic, and brilliant Teddy Roosevelt, you really bring him to life. Steve Bertrand, who is one of my best friends, is going to come on stage with us. And for about a half an hour, you and I are going to be interviewed by him, and we're going to talk about this 25-year journey and how it's evolved. I think that will be the highlight of the show.
Well, I did not know that. That's fantastic. I'm looking forward to that. I'll try to remember some of the more hilarious moments we've had together. I remember one, for example, when I brought the wrong costume and nearly gave your producer a nervous breakdown.
You did. We had to scramble to, like, you showed up in town and they go, he's Roosevelt. No, he's Jefferson. Oh, my God. So then we had to run to a costume shop and find stuff. Oh, my God. I forgot about that. Oh, boy.
Yeah, that was a good one. But I've also had to, like, rearrange flights in blizzards. And, you know, we've had great experiences, but you know what? Let me say something really serious for a moment. The people that we meet on that stage, and there are usually, you know, between 500 and 1,000 people, they're hungry for intelligent conversation about America, its past, and its prospects, its future. You know, I'm always surprised at how serious, and they're in a good mood, and they're playful, and they want to be entertained, and they love your humor, and I think mine too, but they're serious. And it makes you think this country is better than it seems. The people want more. We didn't get it on the debate stage last week. My favorite response by a pundit was of Trump, hell no, and of Joe Biden, oh no. That can't be okay. It can't be okay, John, that this is our country. We need better. We're the most important country in the world. We're the country of greatest consequence, and we're now having to choose between two very imperfect people. And it isn't okay. And so we have to find a way to distill better people to the top. We have to demand more. And I think that we need to find candidates who can speak in complete sentences and have ideas and answer questions.
And tell the truth.
I was so shocked when they would say, you got 2 minutes. And after 12 seconds, they'd say, well, you have another minute and 45 seconds. Is there anything else you want to say about tax policy? Anything else you want to say about immigration? Anything else you want to say about Ukraine? And they just kind of had nothing.
I thought the saddest part of the debate was when it devolved into a test of masculinity, as was going to be played out by a round of golf. And I thought, you know, any other year, any other debate, that might be the stuff of levity. But the stakes are so high, and the guys were so serious about it. It was ridiculous. I have a minute left. Summarize what you're hearing on the road as you trace John Steinbeck's steps across the country.
Thanks for asking. You know, so I'm not getting the full view of the country because I'm in RV parks, and that's a special kind of subset of America, as you might expect. You know, a lot of people want to talk about how many slide-outs they have or how many television screens, including the one that deploys from the side of the rig. And they have a $350,000 RV, and they're in a KOA campground, and they're watching Wheel of Fortune. But to the extent that people want to talk, here's what I'm hearing, John.
They're
weary. They're sad. They're weary, they're exhausted, they're spiritually exhausted. They just want this nightmare, and they don't mean Biden, they don't mean Trump, they mean the whole thing. They want it to end. They want a better America. They want to cheer up. They're just tired of the same old crisis going on now for really 6 years or more.
Yeah.
And they're escaping. They're escaping into the RV parks because there they can talk about things that are not this crisis.
To that, I would say, let's all vote for candidates, politicians from local to national who are honest and smart. If we could just get honest and smart, I think we get better. And I don't think we've been doing that so much lately. On that, you and I stop talking now. We'll talk to the squeaky hysterical, brilliant Teddy Roosevelt. That's going to be November 2nd when you perform as him with me on stage at the Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove. Tickets will go on sale around Labor Day. Stay tuned to WGN Radio for details on that. And safe travels, Clay. By the way, if people want to follow you as you travel about the country and write about this, where do they log on to? What's the website, Clay?
They can go to Facebook and Listening to America, or they can type in my own name on Facebook, or they can go to our website, listeningtoamerica.org, LTAamerica.org. I post every day. I've been drawing pictures of America, and even though I should not quit my day job, people seem to be really enjoying that. And please tell Steve that President Roosevelt might punch him in the snout.
I'll warn Bertrand about that, and I'll talk to you soon. Thank you, my friend.
Love you, my friend.
That's a Clay Jenkinson. You know him as TJ and TR with us on stage. Okay, WGN Radio News from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom is next.